All right. Tuesday morning with a cup of Joe, 101.5 UMFM. Here with, once again, Ryan Stelter, Stelt C94, in the building.
What's going on?
What's going on?
3 weeks in a row now, or is this four?
Oh, that's a good question.
This is three.
It feels like we've been here forever.
I feel like it's been four, but I think
this
it's three.
I just realized this is actually the last Monday of the school week before we go to summer, like before we go to exams and then summer break. So
is this the last episode? The last EP?
It doesn't have to be. I mean, we can keep going to the summer.
I mean, I don't know what I'm doing this summer.
Yeah, so I remember last year I did it. I recorded on Sundays instead.
Yeah.
So if you want to come in on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know. Depends on what Sunday nights would work, but I don't know.
On God's Day.
God's Day, yeah. I have to go to church first.
I know Gail here at UMFM, who hosts the Comfort Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
She records on Sundays usually. And I remember whenever I would come in on Sundays, sometimes like I would come in while she was recording.
Yep.
And like it happened a few times and I kind of felt bad because like she looked like she was like really in the zone and like really working, like just mm-hmm. like had her whole setup, like all the CDs here and everything. And I was like, hey,
I'm here.
Here to record my 1 hour show where I talk to myself. She's like, oh, okay. And she's super nice about it. Like, I really appreciated it. But yeah, if we can do Sunday nights, I think we won't clash with the Comfort Cafe because I would rather not run into that confrontation.
No,
it wasn't confrontation, but you know, I wanted to let her do her thing, you know, like
for sure. Yeah, no, we'll have to figure it out. But yeah, as we plan on the actual radio show.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, you know, our three listeners need to know what's going on.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Yeah, give the people what they want
with the show.
Update.
They got to know. But I'll be here next Monday.
I'll be here next Monday, too.
So we can record then. And then, after that, we'll plan it out and see what happens. But other than that, how's your weekend, Ryan?
It was good. Easter festivities. I had a brunch and a dinner, so there goes my calorie counting for Sunday. But it was
Happy Easter to all the three listeners listening here.
Yeah, Happy Easter, Good Friday, whatever.
Calorie counting. Do you have that MyFitnessPal or whatever?
I use it, but mainly just for like they have meal ideas and they also, I don't know.
You know, personal information got hacked from that.
Yeah, they did.
Too, yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do with my weight and height.
Yeah. I never used it. I was like, well, and then I saw it. I was like, well, that's good.
I was like, I don't know what they could possibly use for me. Here's what I ate. Here's the three bags of chips I ate on Friday, October 17th, 2015. What are you going to do with it, hackers? Go ahead. My FBI agent knows everything about me anyways.
They're going to figure out how to coerce you into, you know, becoming a Russian agent, you know?
Yeah, that's probably what they'll do.
They'll be like, hey, we heard you like chips.
Want to join the Russian spy agency?
Russia makes very good chips.
Oh, really? Thanks. Okay, I'll join. Yep.
Oh, man.
That's actually kind of funny. I don't, like, who cares? What are they going to do with it?
I think some users, they put like way more than they needed to, like in terms of like where they live, where they've been running,
really?
Where they've been, because I think MyFitnessPal like tracks like where you run and stuff too.
Oh, I don't do that.
Yeah. So I think for some users, like it gets way more personal. Like they'll like kind of like how like Google Pixel, like the maps will track where you've been.
Well, Apple does that too.
Does it? Yeah. Okay. So, so every phone does it.
I mean,
so.
Anyone knows where you are at any time. If someone wanted to know where we were right now, they could easily look at it. Number one, going to the Snapchat map.
Yeah. Well, I went ghost mode on that one.
Ooh.
So
they know where I am, but someone could find you. Yeah. It's so easy.
Oh, yeah. It's super easy. Like, that's the thing, right? Like, you might feel like you can, like, turn off a bunch of things, like, on Facebook and privacy settings, but they know.
But who cares? Why put stuff on the internet that you, like, don't want?
Yeah.
It's just common sense, really. People freak out about, like, they got my information. What are they going to do with it? Yeah, they have your birthday. They don't have anything.
Yeah.
As long as the websites where you put your address, where you ship stuff, you know, like those are the ones you want to be secure. Your credit card info.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I'm like, uh-oh, don't ever get hacked.
Amazon?
Yeah. If Amazon gets hacked, I'm screwed.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean,
I think they have a strong enough. They're like a multi-billion dollar company. I think they have a couple million dollars in IT security.
Oh, yeah. Workers are starving. It's all good.
Yeah,
that's not all good.
Are we going to get into that?
No, we won't.
I was just talking about security on my credit card.
Yeah, no, don't worry. Sean's not here, so if Sean were here, then we'd be getting into labor talk. But for now, we'll just talk about how our...
Speaking of Amazon, did you watch the video that Winnipeg put out when Amazon wanted to...
I heard about it.
Second headquarters?
I heard about it. I didn't watch it because I feel like I would have cringed really hard if I watched it.
It was very cheesy.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. And I you know, sure... Like, you could bring Amazon here and give them everything they want, but it's Winnipeg.
I know. It's Winnipeg.
You know, like, it'd be nice if Amazon were here, because then, like, maybe I could find, like, a job relevant, maybe, to what I want to do, but...
Well, Winnipeg would all of a sudden become, a world-class city.
Yeah, that's true.
In, 10 years, you could see... It would be... The Canadian cities you think about would be Toronto, Vancouver, Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Really, if Amazon did come here, that's how big of an impact.
I could see that. Yeah, I know. It would definitely accelerate growth in the city sure.
We'd be a couple mil.
Yeah.
In 10 years.
Oh man.
It'd be insane to see Winnipeg grow like that. It would be kind of cool.
Tinder would be popping.
Exactly. Instead of the same 7 girls we have right now in Winnipeg, we'd have a little bit more variety. Same thing for the girls, too. There's probably more dudes. There's probably about 12 dudes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember this one girl was showing me her Tinder matches, and she had, a bunch. And I was like, wow. And it's like, yeah. And sometimes I see them pop up again because they delete their account and they come back on. I'm like, ah.
Well, that's a strategy, because Tinder is not about how good you're looking you are. It's literally just being a new account in the area. It's the algorithm. It's serious. I've read about it. Don't ask why or how I ended up on articles on Tinder algorithms.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's how it works. If you're a new...
I can see that. That makes sense.
If you're a new profile, you pop up in people's feed. If you're an old profile, you just get buried under everybody else's.
That makes sense. Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. That's why, when I was on for a bit, I kept noticing one girl who kept popping up over and over, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I saw her, 5 days ago.
Yeah. If you want, that's why in that initial 2 weeks, you can get way more matches, and then after, you're going to just dry up.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, if you're ugly, it doesn't help.
That was my problem, I think.
I think that's my problem, too. And honestly,
Tuesday morning with two ugly guys.
That's the new show. No, I think the problem is, I think for both of us, I'll speak for you on this one.
Okay.
We are not ugly, but we are not hot.
Yeah, no.
We fall in the middle. So everyone, but we don't want to date ugly people.
No,
but we're too ugly for hot people.
I think Tinder is an app that allows you to be really just, what sort of looking for?
It's visual. It's superficial.
It focuses
solely on your looks.
Yeah, and so there is a certain when you download apps like Tinder or Bumble or anything like that. I feel like you always you go into the app with a certain ideal person that you want.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. So if you find that person on that app, that works. But the reason maybe we're not getting matches, not that I care.
Yeah,
I care a little bit, but
it's okay. We care a little bit,
but I think the reason why we're not getting matches is that we don't fit the ideal person that a lot of women on Tinder are looking for, which makes sense. You know, I'm looking for a certain person on Tinder too, and I won't match because it doesn't work that way, right? It makes sense. That's just how we are, right?
And I think both of us are stronger in the personality departments.
Yes, I hope so.
I will speak for you again. I think we're both stronger in the personality departments, but people complain. People like us will complain and be like, well, how come all these, you'll see two ugly people together and be like, how come they have a girlfriend? Well, ugly people find each other and hot people find each other. It's those people who are in the middle that have the hardest time.
It's like we're getting mean now.
We're not mean. This is true.
This is sociological fact.
You see two hot people and they're dating. That makes sense. You see two ugly people and they're dating. There are people who are ugly and people who are hot. That's just the way the world works.
That makes sense.
And then you have the in-betweeners like us who... Yeah. Don't want to date ugly people, but we can't date hot people because we're not hot enough.
Exactly. We're not in the minor leagues. We're not superstars, but we're replacement level players.
Yeah. We're in the dugout waiting.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're the pinch hitters.
And then sometimes we get on the field. Sometimes we don't.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, we get put in the game sometimes, but we're not full time players. Yeah.
It'll be very rare. I think one of us you'll either find someone who's better looking than you or someone who's a little bit worse looking than you. That's the only way to go. You have to be the good looking one or the other person has to be the good looking one. If you want to find success in love.
That is
so wrong, but that is my philosophy. And we are now 10 minutes in.
I love how we started talking about Easter and we ended up on Tinder. This is amazing.
Yeah, that works.
Now, I remember I was reading a super interesting article, or a paper, actually. And basically, the author was saying, like this is like, it's like, you know, the way society has advanced now. And the way that we're bombarded with advertisements and commercials and the things that we've seen and read.
Yeah.
To put it, you know, in a feminist way, like the patriarchal structure of society has sort of shaped everyone's desires, right?
Yeah.
And so for you and I think we would agree, ideally, if we could get a blonde girl with blue eyes, that'd be great. That's the standard we set for ourselves. Same for women, right? A woman wants at least, from what I've heard from other women,
they want the typical GQ looking
model. Yeah, it would be nice to find a guy with a six pack, with a chiseled jaw, with a nice hair, you know, and all that. And that sort of shapes our desires and what we look for. And I think that sort of plays heavily into Tinder and all those other apps as well. We have this set idea and characteristics of a person that we want, and we sort of project that onto people that we see.
Yeah.
And then if you don't see it, then it's swipe left. And so I think for you and I, we don't really
fit the mold.
We don't exhibit that sort of those characteristics, right? We try and write something in the bio to catch their attention. But if they don't, if they just swipe, they don't pick our profile.
Yeah, exactly. They don't really see the bio. And that's a really interesting point. And I think also to all those male listeners out there who aren't a big fan of feminism, I believe that kind of patriarchal thing is detrimental to both men and women.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think
absolutely
the way you got to look at it, and two, we're such a, because of online and social media and apps like Tinder and Bumble, we have this, we're deceived almost to think we have so many options.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You think, let's say you're in a relationship, you're lucky enough to get into one.
Yeah.
And you post a picture, you're getting all these likes from all these people, and you're getting kind of these. This sense of affirmation from these people, and thinking, well, maybe these people actually like me.
Yeah,
they don't.
No.
They're just scrolling through, and like me, if you're like me and I know you, I'll like your picture just to be supportive. That's how I frame it. But
yeah, exactly.
Chances are they're not going to want to date you. But you think you subconsciously probably think that, look at all these girls who like my pictures. If my girlfriend isn't what I want, I can just go to these girls, or I can go to Tinder and I can go to Bumble.
Yeah,
and then. You know, that's why there's all these problems of people cheating, and you see that a lot. And I don't know. I think we think we have more options when we're not. Like back in the 60s, you met a girl and you married her.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really all it was.
Hey, baby, I work at the factory.
Yeah. I can afford a house.
I'm straight out of high school and I can buy. I have a house.
I have a house. No way, Jimmy. Let's go get married and have six kids.
Yeah.
But now you can't do that.
It's hard. Yeah, no.
Because
it's changed.
People think they have so many options. You don't.
Because we can create an image of ourselves that really isn't ourselves online. Yeah. And then also, social media, it's so addictive because of that reward system, right?
Yeah.
Where you just get the affirmation of other people.
Yeah, of the likes and the retweets and all
social
that.
Social media, man, I can't. Sometimes I think about just like going off the grid completely.
Yeah.
Just completely. But then it's but I want sports highlights.
Yeah, honestly, that's my biggest reason is because I'm well, sports. I can't leave because of sports. I try to look at social media as a fun outlet.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And kind of entertainment outlet for me.
Yeah.
Like a Netflix or whatever.
I've tried making a separate account, but I forgot about it already. I'm already on my main account, so what's the point of even trying to maintain a second account?
As long as your happiness is not dictated by how many followers you have or likes you get. I think that's the healthy way to look at social media.
Yeah, yeah.
Just have fun on it and enjoy it for what it is.
Well, that's what I've been trying to do. Like, I know a lot some people, they'll try and do a theme or here's my aesthetic on Instagram.
Yeah.
Here's what all my tweets are about.
Yeah.
And I'm just well,
whatever. I'm having fun. As long as you're not being hateful.
Double stuffed Oreos are really good.
As long as you're not being a mean person.
Yeah, exactly. Don't be mean on social media and just be yourself.
Yeah, just have fun and take everything you read on there with a grain of salt.
Yeah, those are the two main rules of social media.
Yep. you know what?
That's why Facebook sucks, because like I see all these people from high school. It's just like,
I love Facebook for the only reason, just to see how racist my Facebook feed is.
Well, that's the only reason why I keep Facebook, is for birthdays and to see how bad the people that had kids when in high school.
I know.
Just, that's kind of mean, but
it's kind of fun. I get a certain sense of Schadenfreude, even though they're probably happy, but I feel like I'm better than them.
Yeah, no, that's the one thing about social media is that
I think I'm better than other people. Yeah, there's a whole another problem, another 15-minute segment.
We get invalidation from strangers on Twitter and Instagram, but we validate ourselves by seeing the people on Facebook.
Yeah, we get a superiority complex. And then we go on Snapchat and put on the front-facing camera, and that goes all the way again.
And then unless you put a filter, it's all good.
I guess.
It's all good. All right, 15 minutes in. That was pretty good, actually.
I think
we did pretty good.
That was a good discussion.
That was a good serious discourse.
Yeah, I'm okay. We could tell other people to listen to this now, other non-sports guys.
Hey, y'all, we talked about this for 15 minutes, but for the rest of the hour, we talked about baseball. Unless we have something else to talk about.
No, let's talk about baseball.
Wait, no.
Yeah.
Stuffing's overrated, you said.
Oh, yeah. just to stick to the theme, I guess, of overrated foods, but I think stuffing is a really overrated food. It's weird. I don't want to eat the thing you shoved inside of a turkey and then cooked it in. I don't know. It's just weird. It doesn't taste that good.
I don't think I've ever had stuffing.
I had it once.
It's just not a thing for me in my family. Like, mm-hmm. We'll have a turkey, but we won't put stuffing. We'll just put like vegetables in there.
Yeah, that I would. I don't know if I'd eat. Actually, you know what? I wouldn't. Don't think I'd eat anything that was inside of a turkey.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I'm just weird, I guess. But
no. I mean,
stuffing is weird.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, if it's not your thing, but yeah, I know. Like, what is stuffing even in the first place?
It's like bread.
Yeah, it's like cornbread, isn't it?
Yes, and then it's cooked inside of the chicken, or sometimes it's cooked on its own, and you just kind of like put. I don't get it.
Yeah, I never.
I don't understand it.
I never really understood it either.
But yeah, I thought I should throw that out there.
We just do ham usually anyways. So.
Ooh, love me some ham. I had ham too, I think.
You boil a ham, you put like pineapple juice on it and stuff like that. Like marinate in pineapple.
Ooh.
Every time.
That sounds good.
Works 60% of the time every time. And it's so good. And it's like, you have leftovers. You make like ham sandwiches or like white bread. And it's like.
That's the best thing about these holidays. Now I have a turkey dinner
at
home waiting
for me. You just meal prep yourself.
It's sweet. That's the best thing about these holidays, like Christmas, Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
big fan of all the food that comes after mashed potatoes.
Huge fan of the franchise.
Huge fan of baseball.
Huge fan of it. The freaky franchise. I was speaking of the franchise. I was watching Tim Lincecum highlights last night. Man, he was dominant. Oh, my goodness. Well, because, I ended up on the MLB page because I was bored last night. And I was like, let's watch the MLB videos. And it was like a look back at Tim Lincecum's career. And I'm like, wow.
He's this good.
This guy. When the Giants were dominant, they were dominant.
Back when they were winning World Series every even year.
And now they lost.
I think that ended in 2014, right? Or no?
No, 2014 they won, 2016 they lost.
Yeah, you're right.
I think they lost to KC in that year, too. Or no, was that the year before?
No, they didn't make it to the World Series in 2016. I think they didn't make the playoffs in 2016 or something.
That's right. Or were they?
KC won the World Series in 2016 against...
That's 2015, I thought.
Yeah, no, you're right. 2015 they
against
won.
Against the Mets. And then 2016 was the...
The Cubs.
Yes.
The Cubs.
There we go.
Duh.
Jeez.
The Cubs and Cleveland's baseball team.
Yeah, that's right. But I think the Giants were a wild card team that year in 2016. Weren't they?
They did make the playoffs
in
2017. Because I know...
Oh, yeah, they did.
No, they didn't.
They didn't.
Because the wild card teams out of the NL West were the D-backs and the Rockies.
And the Rockies, yeah, that's right. Oh, man.
Year, I mean... I don't think so.
No, they lost Bumgarner. Like, there was the same thing last year. They lost Bumgarner at the beginning of the year, and it just set themselves
up. Dirt biking accident.
Yeah, and then it just set themselves up for just failure for the rest of the season, because it's like, there's your ace.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Well, it's like losing Scherzer, losing Kershaw, losing Chris Sale.
It's worse this year, though, because Bumgarner took a comebacker off his hand, right? So it's like, how's he going to be when he comes back?
I know.
You know, like,
it'll take him a while.
Especially when... Your job is to throw with that hand and grip the ball like this, tight, right? So, yeah, I don't know. It sucks because, like, I like Bumgarner. I like Bumgarner as a pitcher. Like, he's just, when he's on, like,
pitchers who rake.
he can rake. When he closed out the 2014 World Series, mm-hmm. like what he finished with like a 0.25 ERA that series, yeah. like just ridiculous numbers, right? So, yeah. But I guess that's all to the wayside now. I mean, it's 2018.
It's a new year, man.
Opening day was March 29, and I love how the first pitch was a home run. Like, I wanted to put that in the article that I wrote for yeah. you. Like, I wanted to be like, oh, a little bit of foreshadowing for you. Ian Happ hits the first pitch for a home run. Yeah. And then another thing, too, that I noticed was that there were 7 more home runs hit this year on opening day compared to last year.
It's, yeah, like you said, we're getting more.
Yeah, yeah. So, I hope they break the record again this year.
That would be insane.
Because that would just be like, because that would just confirm it. Like,
yeah.
That would tell everyone, yeah, the balls are juiced. Like, yeah. look at all this.
Not the players anymore. It's the balls.
It's the balls. It's the balls. So,
but
and
how
the
do pitchers adapt to that?
High fastballs, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you want everything high in the zone. You don't want, because they're all trying to scoop it up, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Because now, since more batters are employing an uppercut swing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really advantageous to get it in the lower half, right?
Yeah.
Whereas,
keep talking.
Yeah, no. So like, it's if a batter gets in the lower half, chances are he'll at least get a fly ball. Whereas now, so I guess if you're a pitcher, you sort of want to adjust towards, if you're throwing a fastball, put it high in the zone, and you know, work on some more off speed pitches, because anything in the lower half, a batter will want to swing at, right? Yeah. So if you can get like a slider, a curve that can like just dip hard out of the zone, then that's perfect. And that's why I think you see a lot of like the pitchers who throw sliders, they get more strikeouts, right? Like Chris Sale, Marcus Stroman, like they can throw a really good slider. And that's why you see them rack up the strikeouts so much now, right? Yeah. Because it's just, I think once that batter sees that it's going towards the lower half, it doesn't matter if he strikes out. Strikeouts aren't like, there's no stigma around strikeouts now anymore, right? Like,
no,
you read about it now, like,
well, there's actually more. I don't have the there was more strikeouts last year, this past year than. But here's an interesting point. We talk about the elevating the ball.
Yeah.
A left-handed batter has about a 0.197 chance of getting on base, hitting a ground ball.
Mm-hmm.
This is down from, in 2011, he had a 235 on-base percentage when he hit a ground ball.
Really?
It's down that far. And now with the...
Is that because people are employing more shifts?
No, it's the shifts. It's the shifts, and it's also just... that is mainly just the shifts. Right. And then the reach base rate, which is in the on base rate, but that also includes errors, getting on base by errors.
Yeah.
You have under 20% chance of getting on base as a left-handed hitter with all the shifts that are going on now. And speaking of shifts, this article isn't crazy. There was 19,823 more shifts this past season than last season.
19,000?
Yeah, shifts last season. 26,705 shifts in 2013, 6,882, and in 2010, 2,463.
It's crazy how fast you've seen the game evolve in terms of
in just
like,
a couple of years.
Yeah, like ever since analytics got more involved, like it's been such a huge shift. And like I was gonna say earlier, like with the stigma gone around strikeouts, like the best example of that is Aaron Judge, right? Like last year he leads the AL or the league. No, the AL in home runs, mm-hmm. but he also leads in strikeouts.
Yeah.
Right?
And Joey Gallo is another one with that.
He mashed, 41 home runs, but he had like a 201 average, batting average?
I think he had the least amount of singles for a hitter who had over 30 home runs in a season or something like that.
Right.
Because he just strikes out all the time. He either strikes out or hits a homer. That's all he does.
And it's like...
And he's also the one that's getting really getting shafted by the shifts. I don't know if you saw... they're playing the Astros. He had 4 guys in the outfield.
Yeah,
On the right side, and then he hits his home run. He's going Oppo Taco.
Yeah, I saw that.
So like, he's getting sewered because if he's not hitting a home run, he's not getting on base.
Right, right.
Or doing anything.
But I mean, like that's been the whole like MO of just sabermetrics, right? Like they view it as you buy wins with runs, yeah. right? So it doesn't matter how many times Gallo strikes out. If he's mashing 41 home runs a year, 40-plus home runs a year,
yeah.
Those are runs that you didn't have before, right?
Yeah.
And those are runs that help you win games. So,
but there's also been a decreased value in home runs when you see a guy like Mike Napoli who hit 30 home runs last year,
yeah.
only gets a minor league deal.
Yeah.
Hitting home runs aren't that important anymore.
Well, how old is Mike Napoli?
I don't know. He's old, but I mean, that's another thing in this article that I sent you, which is like just fascinating. On The Athletic, I should credit Jason Stark from The Athletic.
Because I think that him not getting a deal is a different issue in terms of the labor market. Cause, yeah, he's 36.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hitting 30 home runs 10 years ago, he would have been signed immediately. It doesn't matter if he's 36,
exactly.
Right? But here's the interesting stat. There are 144 hitters who had gotten enough plate appearances to qualify for the batting title last season, and 89 of them hit at least 20 home runs. That comes to a mind-boggling 61.8%. In 2014, that was 32%.
Yeah. No, it's...
So the value of home runs, and they said almost 62% of all qualifying hitters in the big leagues now hit 20 home runs.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, you barely saw a 30 home run hitter not so long ago,
I know.
Right?
30 home runs is, like, kind of a big thing. Like,
yeah.
If you said a guy was going to hit 30 home runs, it was like, oh, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah. Now,
it's like, well, he should be hitting 30 home runs, which is insane.
Yeah.
But they said if you look at all the averages of all the batting positions, the eighth and ninth batters are hitting the lowest, 16.4 and 12.1, respectively,
mm-hmm.
in terms. But those are also pitchers sometimes.
Exactly. But, so it's just, it's crazy how much, like, more home runs are being hit, but now that there's more home runs, it's inflating the value of a home run, and then that just plays into the whole labor thing where we see guys who are in their late 30s who could be serviceable, who can easily play a starting position on any team,
mm-hmm.
but teams would rather employ someone from the system who will only get paid $500,000 a year compared to a guy where you offer maybe $10 million, $50 million a year. And so, you know,
The young guy can hit you just as many home runs.
Exactly. And that's a young guy now who's been through the system, who's being taught the new swing, who is more athletic probably compared to some of the older guys.
Yep.
Like, all these characteristics that you want in a player for nearly like a 30th of the value
exactly.
of a starting player. And I think that's another thing about baseball now is that I remember reading this article. There's more of a focus now on having cheaper players from your system compared to signing older players who, you know, might get injured and who on average are performing at the same rate as a younger player from a system would. And so that's why we saw, you know, so many free agents this offseason go unsigned, is that because, you know, a lot of owners are doing more cost cutting, which is unfortunate because, you know, these players would, you know, they deserve a job.
Yeah, no, right? I completely agree. I mean, Mark Reynolds, he didn't even get a job.
Yeah, they
he
deserve. Yeah,
home runs last year.
They deserve to be on a team, but because of how the economics of baseball working now, you know, it's shifting towards not signing them. But yeah. And so I remember reading in the article, you know, the collective bargaining agreement in the MLB with the MLBPA expires in 2021.
Yeah.
And obviously when it comes back to bargaining, the issue is going to be, hey, either pay the younger players more or start paying the veteran players that deserve to be paid.
Yeah.
And have a clause in for that. But obviously the owners don't want to do that. If they're saving money and still putting people in the seats, plus the advantage of having a prospect is, like, you know, who is this guy?
Yeah, exactly.
He could be someone that blows up. He could be someone that just
becomes a star.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
all that kind of.
There's so much uncertainty that makes it exciting about a younger player. Whereas with a veteran player, you're kind of like, well, I've seen this guy before.
Yeah,
I've seen this guy run the bat. Like, I know what he's capable of. I know what he does. I know I've seen all the coverage about him. Like everything, right? So I thought that was interesting too. Like, it's not so much an economic reasoning, but also just a sort of practical reasoning in terms of, like, keeping interest in the game with having younger players. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting to read. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and I think Cody Bellinger is a good example of that.
Exactly.
Because now Adrian Gonzalez, who's a very, very capable first baseman, has gone out of L.A. now.
And now
you're getting a young kid, Cody Bellinger, who's probably making, I don't know their salaries, but he's not making nearly as much as Agon. And they traded him to Atlanta?
No, he's in the Mets now, I think.
He's at the Mets? Yeah. Well, I think they traded to, no, yeah, he's with the Mets.
Yeah, all the old guys are the Mets.
Yeah.
Like Todd Frazier. Todd Frazier, Adrian Gonzalez. Should just send Cologne back there, man.
Jay Bruce, he's pretty old.
I think Jay Bruce, wait, where'd Jay Bruce go? Oh, yeah, he went back to the Mets, right?
He's still at the Mets, yeah. He was there last year.
Well, because he went to Cleveland.
Yeah.
And then he went back to the Mets.
Yeah, he got traded back.
It's just all old dudes on that team.
I know.
I love it. Like, it must suck to be a Mets fan. Like, how you get into the World Series 2015, and it just gets blown.
I was amazed at how bad they were after coming back from the World Series. Like,
Yeah, I know, right? Like, they just sunk. It's crazy.
Yeah, crazy. I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you got Syndergaard still.
I think, that was the main reason. Like, their entire pitching staff just got obliterated, right? It was like, Syndergaard was gone, DeGrom was gone, Mats was gone, Harvey just looked like garbage. Where is Harvey now?
I don't know. I don't know. Also, I feel like Syndergaard's going to blow his shoulder out at one point. There's no way any human can continue to throw over 100.
Yeah.
Consistently throwing. He throws so hard.
He's a big guy, though.
Yeah.
I think he'll be fine, but there's a good chance he might injure something eventually.
I mean, any pitcher. I mean, look at Clayton Kershaw. Almost every year now, he's getting on the 60-day DL with some kind of issue.
That's true.
You know, you get older, that's just what happens. Your velocity dips. I mean, that's what they were talking about. Kershaw's velocity isn't the same, but
he'll adjust,
though. I think he'll adjust, throw more curves.
It's really nice that he has that curveball.
Yeah.
Like, that's easily $1 million pitch right there.
Yeah.
Right? Like.
No, that's a good point. I mean,
so, you look at, like, Pedro Martinez.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a hard thrower early in his career. There's a velocity dip, but he figured out, you know, okay, if I can locate pitches, if I can adjust, if I can throw more off speed, that's fine. Kyle Hendricks on the Cubs can barely top 92.
Yeah.
But he's so dominant, right? Yeah. Because he pitches. He's not throwing for velocity. He's throwing to locate and, like, get into the batter's mind, which...
Well, Rich Hill is another one, too. I mean, 60% of the time he's throwing curveball, and he's, like, 38.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's working it, and which is interesting. Lance McCullers, who's, like, 25, is also throws, like, over 50% of the time he throws curveballs.
Yeah,
but his curveball's just nasty.
Yeah, it's some good stuff. Ugh.
But I had another interesting stat, which, I mean, kind of ties into the whole... your article about home runs and the shifts and the launch angles and all that. There was last season, there was 8,184 fewer balls in play than the year before.
Mm.
In 2008, there was 133,000 balls in play. In 2017, that's dropped all the way now to 125 balls in play. There's been a decrease, steady decrease almost every year.
Because there's more fly balls?
Well, yeah, the more fly balls. So, your launch angle changes and all your swing changes, that gets more home runs, but that also you get more pop-outs and fly balls that are way easier to
track. I got to get that subscription to that.
For this article alone, I was just fascinated. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And I think that also...
And you know I'm a numbers guy.
Yeah, I know. And I was like, this is Joe's art. I think Joe wrote this. But I was going to say, like, I remember talking to my dad when we were watching that pitching duel between Johnny Cueto and Alex Wood on the second day there. The Giants and Dodgers both almost had perfect games, no hitters going into, like, the seventh inning. So it was just like, but there's so many pop-outs. There's so many of them. And I was like, you know, this isn't that fun. I know home runs are fun to watch, and there was a home run in that game. That was the only Joe Panic, his second.
Yeah.
And then San Fran just didn't score a run the rest of the series. But, like, I kind of like, it's like, if you're not hitting a home run, you got to hit it like a line drive against the shift if you want any chance to get on base.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, I think it kind of takes a bit out of the game, because I think that's kind of exciting to get that kind of...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I love a good double play, right? Like, just to see, like, a good, you know, throw from the third, throw from the short. Like, it's always fun to see that, because, like, it exhibits, I think, just, like, the their actual ability, like, why they're there in the first place, right?
Yeah.
That's why you have a third baseman, a shortstop, second baseman, first baseman, is that you want to see these plays be made in the infield. But, more and more hitters and are employing an uppercut swing that just results in more fly balls, which... You know, for the casual fan, I think that's fun. It's like, oh, is it a home run? Nah, it's not a home run. Oh, is it a home run? Nah, it's not a home run. So, like, it's good for the casual fan, but, like, for you and I, like, that, like, and for everyone else that understands the game a bit better, like, you want to see more exciting plays. You want to see you want to see more digs. You want to see
It'd be cool to see some, you know, guy run, you know, trying to take third base when he maybe he shouldn't, or like, or, you know, just seeing that some action, you know, where the pressure, where there's bases are loaded.
And seeing like a hitter able to like poke a ball through the ship or something like that. Well, I think that's why Joey Votto is so much fun to watch, right? Because he can like, he can hit home runs, but he's just such a good hitter that he can like pick off shifts and just, you know, he can make it doesn't matter what you throw at him. Like,
I know
he's getting on base somehow.
I know,
which that's, is like the best part.
I think
about him.
I think Ken Rosenthal, when he was doing his joke prediction, he said Joey Votto doesn't swing at a pitch until June, but his OBP is like 600. So I'm like, yeah, well, you know what? That's actually not that
that's
crazy.
That's not a joke.
No, that's not a joke. That could happen.
That's actually plausible. Yeah, no, absolutely.
But that's like hitters like that are. Those are guys are fun, but they're dying because it's just you get Joey Gallo, Aaron Judge, those power sluggers.
There is a less of a focus now on manufacturing runs. Yeah. It's all about get on base. Someone's gonna hit a home run eventually.
Yeah, I think the thing is like if we could hit a home run every two innings.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter if all our guys strike out or pop out, but we're still getting a single or just getting a single run in.
Yeah,
you know, doesn't matter if there's a guy on base.
I think that was why it was so fun to watch Pilar get a single and then steal second and then steal third and steal home.
That's like, the kind of thing you don't see.
No. I mean, like when they say what, like, so that was the first time in franchise history someone stole in three in an inning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time since 2013 that someone's done that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, which, you know, since 2013, that's been around the time where
This kind of change has happened.
Well, that's where the batters started using different swings. I know that's when like JD Martinez
mm-hmm.
went to go see a consultant. All the other players,
Justin Turner,
yeah, they all went to go see a consultant about this new swing, right?
Yeah.
Like you. When's the last time you've seen someone bunt?
I think someone tried to bunt once, but it didn't work.
Yeah,
but
like, you got another stat?
Yeah, I got another stat for you.
All right, let's see. All right,
we're talking about stolen bases. Okay. Ricky Henderson. 36 years ago, stole 130 bases.
Oh, he was the king.
Last year, the leader stolen bases was Whit Merrifield. He had 34 stolen bases.
Wow.
The attempts just say, 17 players stole 20 bases or more last season. There were 44 in 1999. You know, during the PED era.
Yeah, yeah.
As of 2011, nine teams were stealing 130 plus bases. In 1983, there were 17 when the average team stole 128.
That's crazy.
The attempts are down. That's what they're saying. Yeah. How many times do you actually see a guy try to steal a base?
Exactly.
There's very few guys steal
bases.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I thought it'd be Billy Hamilton that would have led last year, but.
Yeah, no, he was probably up there. But.
Yeah, so Whit Merrifield. So, yeah, like you.
But he had 34. The leader 36 years ago had 130.
Yeah.
And now teams are only, as a collective, stealing 130.
Yeah, no, that's. I think that's definitely showing how much it's shifting away now. Like, there's no focus on trying to manufacture a run. Like, just somebody get on base and someone's going to clean up.
Yeah.
Which
is, to me, I don't know. I think kind of takes a bit of the fun away.
I think it does, too. Like, I think for you and I, like who've been watching the game for a while now, like, it's nice to get some variety.
Yeah.
Like, because we know who the home run hitters are. We know who can hit a home run. We've seen all that before. And, like, it's still fun to watch every time, but it's definitely more fun for the casual fan, right?
Yeah.
Because that's why they're there.
Yeah.
They want to see a home run. They're not there, you know, to... You know, oh, what's he going to throw in a 2-1 count? Yeah. You know, or is he going to swing at a 3-0?
Yeah.
Does he get the green light of the 3-0? Like, they're not thinking that, right? They're thinking, okay, well, this guy hit a home run.
Yep.
And so
Walks are another thing that are down too.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that's part of the reason why Rob Manfred and the MLB have been, like, sort of, like, really quiet about the whole juice balls thing. Like, they don't want to say anything, but it's obvious.
Yeah.
Right? But I think they realize that, you know, fans are more attentive to the game when you have a chance to hit a home run. And that's the kind of the message that I want to get across to you in my article too, was like at the end of the article, I was like, you know, pay attention. Like, if you're a casual fan, watch the MLB games because you might see you'll definitely see a home run
exactly.
in that game. And so, like, it's a good time to start getting into baseball.
Yep.
So I think it's good for, like, growing the game. But, you know, like you said, like, you, for you and I, like, it's fun to watch someone steal second, steal third.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch someone, you know, get an infield hit, right? Like, someone who just, like, pokes it into the next to the mound.
Into the gap,
and they just run right towards first. Like, that's a lot of fun because, like, you get to see the other side of the whole athleticism of baseball, speed, yeah. and
just the excitement of what, like, is he going to make it? Is he not? Like, oh, is he going to drive the run home?
The speed and the deception involved, because I don't think that gets enough credit. Like, on the face of it, no casual fans thinking like, oh, you know, what's he thinking? Is he going to? But you know, like with Pilar's stealing home, like. Betances was shook. Like, you could see it. Like,
oh, it was hilarious.
Yeah, once Pilar stole second, like, Betances is like, oh, man, okay, well, let's see what happens. And then he stole third, and it's like, Betances is like, oh, my goodness, okay. Yep. Like you don't see it, but you know, like, Pilar's in Betances' head at that moment, and then you know that Gary Sanchez is not a catching catcher.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's improved it this year or not,
well,
but
no.
then Pilar stole home. Yeah. And then it was like, Betances tried throwing, but, like, just went way off.
Yeah,
and,
well,
like,
I think that's what I mean when I texted you, like, he totally threw him off.
Yeah.
I think he probably caught him in the corner because he was already halfway to home.
No, well, he was like this.
Yeah.
And then, like, he just went.
And so then I bet you out of the corner eye, he's seeing Pilar, and he's like, well, I don't know, his throw was off. And
well, I mean, if that's me, I'm panicking. Yeah. I'm like, oh, no.
Just like, getting the ball off.
Try and get it over there. But that, too, he probably had a pitch in mind.
Yeah.
He's probably thinking slider because that's the only reason why it would go that far away, right?
Yeah.
Like, you would still have that grip on, and you just, like, went in through it, like. So I don't know. Yeah, I agree. I think for you and I, like, it's not as fun to watch just seeing home runs. I think that's why.
But
I think that's why pitchers' duels are a lot more fun to watch nowadays.
Yeah.
For us, because it's like holy
way
smoke.
More tactical.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, no one's hitting home runs. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, but if I'm to play the devil's advocate on that home run for the casual fan, I think eventually home runs, and I even said this during the World Series, like, they get boring.
Oh yeah.
When you come to expect them and you come to see them, they become boring. And I think I look at home runs as the way, same way goals are in soccer.
Mm-hmm.
I read this whole book about soccer and how many, you know, it's goal, like, the goals are so low. You know, you get 1 to 2 goals a game.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in North America just cast that off as it's boring, right? There's not enough goals. But I think that's what makes the game so special. When see that goal happen, it's like everything's coming together to happen. You know, you have 11 guys on the field to make that goal happen. And when it happens, it's just so crazy. And the crowd goes nuts and they mean so much.
Well, I'm not that into soccer, but watching Zlatan's goal.
Oh, yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but that game was still 4-3, which is crazy for a soccer game.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you see, and that's why that Germany-Brazil 7-1 in the World Cup was just absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah.
You'd never see that at that high of a level at that state on that stage. And I think that's why, to me, soccer and goals and home runs and baseball are very similar, because they're such a special thing. They don't happen all that much.
Yeah.
And I think when it does happen, it's a special thing you savor and you remember, and it's big and you're excited, and it helps, you know, grab your attention and helps you with that. So I think, you know, if soccer did something to change the rules, or they juice their balls and all of a sudden you're seeing 7-6 soccer games, you'd be like, oh, whatever, they're scoring all the time. It's not that fun, because, you know, in soccer you have to work so hard to get those goals.
Yep.
And in baseball, I think, you know, eventually if we see all these 11-5 games, or, you know, all these home runs, I think eventually it'll lose its luster. Right now it's not. It's great for the fans, but I think eventually it's not the right way to...
No, I agree. Because, like, if you're a casual fan, you see a bunch of home runs and thinking, yeah, okay, I'll get into baseball now.
Yeah.
But then it's going to get boring.
Exactly. And it's already boring for you and for me. I think it's kind of already boring. It's,
yeah.
But I think, the balls in play, the tactical side, just, and I think that's way more fun to me. But that's also me.
Yeah, no. I think seeing clutch home runs too.
Yeah,
fun to watch. So it's like, you know,
a walk off is you know, or seeing Justin Smoke's grand slam the other day.
Exactly.
That was insane. I mean, those homers and those special moments. But he also had 3 guys on base. How often do you see that anymore?
Yeah.
It seems like
yeah.
How many times do you see a grand slam home run to win a game?
Yeah. No. Exactly. I don't know. It's
just because those are the home runs you remember. You don't remember the home run in the bottom of the fifth that was a solo shot. It's the home runs that you remember, you know, bottom of the ninth.
Well, how many like who homered in game 5 of the World Series?
See, exactly. Everyone.
Everyone. Yeah, no, you could say everyone homered in that game.
That was insane. I mean,
it's true.
That was ridiculous. I was like, oh, well, it's going to be another homer. Like, that's what they need. And then all of a sudden, you know, they get their homer to tie back up.
Yeah, like, I think in that situation, that's all the fun. I mean, at that... And, like, it's the World Series, it's game 5.
It's that level, right?
But if I were to see that in, like, a normal game, like, I would have shut off the game already.
Yeah, like, I'd been like, okay, whatever.
It's like, okay, well, it's a home run derby now, so I guess I'll just leave because I'll just have to score later.
Exactly.
Because, yeah, like, in the World Series, like, that was extra innings. Like, oh, my God, who's going to win the game?
Yeah,
oh,
that one, I mean, I hate home runs. I mean, the Dodgers lost. I was cheering for Dodgers.
That's right.
This one hurts for me, but, yeah, that was fun. That was insane to watch. Had heart pounding. It was the drama. But
if I were to see that in April, I think I would
be... Which you probably will.
Yeah, I think I'd be uneasy about the home runs this year, because I'd be like, okay, well, if they're launching 10 home runs in a game, I don't know about that.
I'd also, like, RIP those pitchers' ERAs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I remember when Ohtani gave up that, when Ohtani gave up that 3-run home run, it was like, ERA, 12.50.
Yeah. Even though he pitched a great game up until then.
I think it's down. It's definitely down now, but I'll check it right now. Let's see what we got.
But you see that, too. I mean, even looking at the pitching duel I mentioned on the weekend between Cueto and Wood, it was a solo shot homer that ended the game. It was like he pitched a perfect game. Cueto, at least, was pitching almost a perfect game. Or no.
Ohtani's got a 4.50 ERA right now.
Not good, but it's not bad.
I think that's the thing, too, with, like, back then, or, like, a few years ago, it's like 4.5 ERA. I mean, like, that guy's getting sent down.
Yeah.
But now with so many home runs, it's like, oh, okay, well, that's kind of normal.
Yeah, now a guy's got a 3.3 ERA. You're like, that's not bad.
It's like, well, who was it, Aaron Sanchez that led the ERA last year? I think he had, like, a 2.9 something, like, near 3. Like, near 3 now. Near 3 ERA for a pitcher is that's pretty good for an ace. Like, that's weird to me, you know?
I know.
Because, like, not too long ago, we were like, oh, he's got a 1.5 ERA. That's insane.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you got to think, oh, 3 ERA. Oh, he managed that?
Yeah. But then, too, like, I know there was the dead ball era where there was no home runs. And
right, right.
That was also boring. I mean, where is the balance? You got to find some kind of balance.
Yeah, I don't know. I think...
It's hard.
I think we had that balance for a bit there before pre-2015, like...
Before the fancy stats.
Before the juice balls came, which was apparently mid-2015. Like, those were fun times to watch, because, like... There was the perfect amount of, like, uncertainty in a game. Where it was like, is he going to hit a home run? And then you had the guys who, like, didn't usually hit home runs, right? But now it's like...
Now that happens even more. Now the guy batting eighth could hit a home run.
Well, now Scooter Jeanette can get 4 home runs in a game, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. Drafted Scooter for that only reason, my fantasy team.
Take away from it, like, that's really impressive. He got all his stuff taken to Cooperstown, but it's like, man, like, if I can see anyone hit a home run, you know, that's fun for a bit, but I can see myself... Like, I'm into it right now, but I can see myself getting bored of it after a while, I think. I don't know.
That's what me, I've been saying. I'm bored of home runs, which is crazy to think. I mean, it's like being bored of touchdowns or goals.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think it's also different. Baseball is such a different, unique sport compared to any of the other big three.
So, like, we're talking about, like, this whole thing about how, like, analytics stats and, like, sabermetrics kind of, like, have shifted the game in baseball, right? Like, we see less manufacturing of runs, less bunts, less attempts of steals because those were in outs, right? Like, the whole idea that you want less outs and you want to buy runs.
Yeah.
So, like, I know with the NHL now, like, there's more of a focus on, like, advanced stats. So, like, do you think we'll see any sort of, like, shift in, like, philosophy there, too? Like,
I don't know.
Like, I feel like...
I think...
I haven't watched a lot of hockey games, but are we seeing less dump and chase now because of the fact that you have a better chance of entering the zone with the puck?
I think that style of game is kind of gone by the wayside. It's more of a... possession style game. If you have the puck on your stick, you have a better chance of scoring.
Yeah.
And hockey is such a... is probably the hardest for advanced stats just because of how many variables there are and how, you know, there's just stuff you can't factor in, like the ice bump, the puck bouncing, you know, this doing that, like, and it's just so fast.
Yeah.
I think the fancy stats in hockey are very hard, and there's only a few that I kind of trust. Corsi's one of them, and the Fenwick and PDO, those are kind of the only ones I kind of trust, and maybe offensive zone starts, but those also are, you got to take those because if that's, Your Connor McDavid's going to get a lot of offensive zone starts. It's kind of obvious.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
And plus minus is not a real stat. Get rid of it now.
Yeah.
But like in hockey, I think you're seeing more of a. I think hockey's benefiting more from the fancy stats as a sport than maybe baseball is in terms of how we've been talking about it.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing more. You're getting rid of the enforcer goon type guys. You're seeing more speed up and down the lineup, a reliance on all four lines to be able to score and play at a high level,
I think that was the biggest shift.
That's to me the biggest shift in hockey the last few years. And that's only the last couple of years. You're not seeing teams like Boston or LA winning the cup anymore. You're seeing teams like Pittsburgh and Chicago, who are fast, speedy, possession style teams, winning the cup. That's to me the future of hockey, which I'm excited about. I think that's a good way to go about it. Because I think it's good for the game. I think it's entertaining for fans. And
well, yeah. I mean, there's a less emphasis on just trying to, like, kill a guy and more emphasis on, like, trying to, deflect and, sort of deke, which I think is awesome. Yeah. No, I agree.
For me, hockey is benefiting a lot from the advanced stats era. But as we kind of have been lamenting about baseball, it may be not as beneficial right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, compared to baseball, hockey analytics is still pretty much in its infancy, right?
Yeah, like, I think a lot of sports are still in their infancy. I think, like, advanced stats, we're still going to see more of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, because Bill James wrote the baseball sabermetrics book, I think, in, like, 1985 or something like that.
Well, there's always been those guys who wrote their stats and did their thing, and everyone kind of was like, whatever.
But baseball was the easiest because you had the one-on-one matchups, right?
Yeah, baseball is by far the easiest to do advanced stats.
Yeah, whereas with hockey, it's five players on the ice
and they change.
Five players. Yeah, they change.
And it's just so fast, and how many turnovers there are.
That's why I always thought, like, even like Corsi with like a certain line is always like kind of bothered me, because it's like, well, how long is he on the line for with these people?
Exactly,
right?
Like, you could get caught out on an icing call.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What are you counting for?
His
you know, the fourth line guy gets stuck out there with the top line guy.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, his Corsi's going to bump up because he's playing with the top guys. Or this guy's dragging the Corsi down.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting to see that, how hockey will adapt to advanced stats. I think there is a chance that it'll be as not as comprehensive, but comprehensive enough to make the same conclusion as you can in baseball.
Yeah.
But right now, just the way that the game is played and how team-based it is, right?
Yeah.
Because you can isolate players on baseball.
Oh, yeah. Well, because it's basically just a one-on-one, like you said, every time.
Whereas with hockey, it's like five guys. Football, there's 12 dudes on the field. Yeah. Basketball, there's five guys on the court.
I think basketball might be easier because those five guys tend to stay a lot longer. LeBron James out there for almost the whole game if he wants.
And I think it's easier to determine how good a player is with a certain player in basketball than it is in hockey.
Yeah.
Unless the guy's like a superstar, right? Because you could say, anyone with Crosby or McDavid will be really good.
Well, and I think football, too, with cornerbacks and wide receivers, because they often line up against each other.
That's true.
Quite a lot. I'm not big into the advanced stats in football. I don't know if there is any.
I think there is especially with cornerbacks, I saw a lot. Like, it was like, oh, here he is in certain situations. Here he is with interceptions. Here he is facing a certain player. You can isolate those sort of situations. But, I think hockey is overall the hardest one to really sort of get it down.
Yeah.
I mean, the only way I could see, the only way it gets isolated is, like, shootouts or penalty shots.
Yeah, but everybody hates those.
Yeah, which is not
and
really.
And they don't mean anything.
Yeah, which is not really a fair assessment of a player's skill.
No, and it's like 70% of the time he goes backhand. Well, thanks, coach. I'll remember that. But he could also not do that.
Thanks, Mike Milbury. Yeah.
But, I'd be interested to look. I think football has a big potential to have the game revolutionized by fantasy stats.
Oh, man. I tried using that last year in my fantasy draft. I was like, let's look at some stats. And I was like, I don't understand any of this.
I remember looking once and I was like,
I will leave that to the experts.
Yeah, thanks. someone dumb this down for me, please. What is the most important? Those fantasy stats go through that kind of where there's a bunch of them, and then everyone kind of, the old school guys kind of look at them and are like, well, this actually makes more sense.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. I think you always have to take fancy stats with a grain of salt. It doesn't explain the game.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of gives you a different perspective or shines a light on why.
I remember reading from a website, I think, that was huge into like hockey analytics, and it was like, no, we're not trying to replace stats in hockey. We just want to supplement how you view the game, which I think is the correct way of looking at these stats, right? Like, you don't look at a guy's Corsi and determine his skill off of that. You still have to look at his goals and assists and everything like that.
If he's not scoring and shooting percentage, that's another one that I've in hockey, I think, is like how many times he shoots.
Yeah.
Because if he's not shooting, he's not putting pucks on net, and he's lessening his chance of scoring.
Right, exactly. Which I think is how Corsi can help supplement that, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, yeah, but it's not meant to be like, oh, if he's got a high Corsi, he's a really good player. It's like, well, no, you can't make that conclusion.
Like, I mean, really, all you got to do is, like, if he's above 50, he has a puck on his stick a little more than the average player.
Right.
And then you're like, okay, well, you know, that makes sense.
Let's see if he's making these opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. How's his shooting percentage now? Yeah. Is he getting goals? And if the guy has a puck on his stick 60% of the game, but he gets 4 goals in a year, I don't care.
He's not good.
Doesn't mean you're good.
He's not good.
No. And that's what I think. You just, like, goals and assists have never defined a player. Even in the before all this, goals and assists never really did define a player. I mean,
yeah.
Could depend on his line mates, how, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just because a guy gets 30 goals. I mean, look at Jonathan Chichu. Jonathan Chichu in 2007 Rocket Richard winner. And now where is he?
He killed it.
He killed it that year. But, like, he's gone now. He faded from irrelevancy. He faded from relevancy from that year on.
That's true.
I mean, I think when you talk to those dinosaurs who are, you mentioned advanced stats and they kind of get a shudder. You just got to say to them, hey, look, goals and assists never defined a guy either.
Yeah.
These are just kind of...
Those guys are annoying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, wins and losses never define a goalie. They shouldn't define a goalie.
It's weird how much, like, old guys in baseball embrace advanced stats more than the old guys in, like, hockey.
Yeah.
Or, like, I don't know about basketball, football, but especially hockey, there's been such a divide, right? Yeah. Like,
hockey's definitely still an old boys club and not wrong kind of old boys club.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's like, you hear them on TV, they're like, oh, you put all these advanced stats there, but there's some tangibles.
Yeah.
It's like, there are intangibles, but we just want to help.
Exactly. It's not, this doesn't paint the whole picture. It just kind of, you know, colors in some lines. It's not the whole thing. And I think... And baseball is such a traditional sport as well, like with the stuff they do in the uniforms and you know, the size of the fields and how they play. It's just very traditional in that sense. But I think the hockey guys will come around. Eventually, all the old guys will go away and the new fresh blood will come in and say, hey, look, guys. I mean, look, I think Phoenix is already doing that with their GM. They got a really young GM who's into fancy stats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. They did hire someone like that. Yeah, he was like 33 or something like that.
I don't remember
his
name.
He's super young, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any predictions for the playoffs at all?
For what? Baseball or hockey?
NHL, yeah.
You know what? I'll be an anti-Winnipeg Jets, but... They lose in the first round. How about that? There's a hot take.
Why?
I don't know. I think it's because everyone's focusing on this Nashville-Winnipeg second round. I'm like, well, you know what, guys? You got to make it out of the first round.
I
think even the Jets locker room, they're probably focusing on Nashville more than they are Minnesota.
Yeah, so they would play Minnesota, right? If they did, if the season ended now, they play Minnesota. Yeah. And Minnesota.
And nobody's talking about Minnesota.
Minnesota's 4-3-3 in their last 10. I mean, obviously they have Dubnyk, who has got some playoff experience.
Yep.
Whereas Hellebuck, still a rookie.
There's a lot of rookies on that team still in terms of playoffs.
Young players. So I think it'll definitely, if they do play Minnesota, that'll be a series that will be tougher than they expect.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think that'll be the series that defines the rest of their playoffs. If they win that series, then I think they can go far. But
they could go, you know what? I'm not saying they couldn't.
No, I know. But, I mean, like, that's the one series that they have to focus, like, they have to, like, win.
Yeah, because people keep talking about Winnipeg-Nashville.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Nashville could lose, too. Like, why are you guys focusing on the second round so much? It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I know,
like,
what you mean, yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, I can't wait for Winnipeg-Nashville. Ooh, you know what, guys? A lot of crazy stuff happens in the playoffs every year.
Well, I mean, look at last year. Nashville was an 8 seed, technically.
Exactly. And they went all the way to the cup final. So, you know what, guys? Stop sleeping on all these teams.
So
stop predicting the second round when the first round hasn't even happened yet.
It's a good point. Can't predict the future.
No.
That's a really good point, Steltzy.
That's all I'm saying.
That's a hot take from Steltzy.
That's my hot take. I'm excited. I want a Toronto-Boston series, and I want a Philly Pittsburgh series, but we might not get that because Boston's top of the Atlantic right now.
Oh, that'd be good.
But yeah,
Toronto-Boston rematch.
And Toronto's would have a tough time getting it out against Tampa, I think.
Oh, so Tampa has to overtake Boston in the standings, and then Toronto has to just stay there.
Yeah. But I would love a Toronto-Boston series.
There's potential. There's definitely potential there. I want to see that for sure.
And I'd love a Philly.
Yeah.
Philly-Pittsburgh series. Those are my favorite series to watch back in, like, the 2010s.
Oh, the Philly-Pittsburgh series was awesome, especially when you had, like, all, like who was there? Like, Zach Ronaldo on the
Flyers? Yeah, exactly. Scott Hartnell. Oh, man. Maxime Talbot.
That was awesome.
Chris Pronger.
Yeah.
I love that.
That was such a good series.
Those rivalries, that and Vancouver and Chicago are some of my favorite playoff series that have happened in the last couple years.
Yeah.
Like Vancouver and Chicago have had some really good series.
When they finally beat them in seven games. Oh.
After being up 3-0, though, and they forced it to overtime. I was cheering for Chicago so hard.
I got nervous, man.
I know you're a Canucks fan, and I hate the Canucks.
I got nervous. All right, well, I think that's the end of the show, my guy.
That was good.
You're in an hour. Yeah, we talked about some serious topics, talked about some baseball. This is a good episode. I thought I was going to mail it in, but...
No, this is good.
This is really good.
High-quality content.
Yeah, this one's going to Twitter.
Yeah, we're putting this on the twits.
I'll put on YouTube, maybe, even.
Ooh.
Should I do that?
Yeah, why not?
And then we'll just put...
Just an hour of Joe and Ryan talking about
just
things.
Just put two random pictures of us. we'll get Malak to draw us.
Oh, good call. Yeah, she'll do that.
Malak, right.
Malak Abbas, managing editor at the Manitoban.
Yeah. Anything else you want to close off with?
Don't drink and drive, and good luck on your exams, everybody.
Yeah, good luck on your exams, everyone. It's getting cold out there, so stay warm.
It's too cold.
Yeah.
I got frostbite this morning, I'm pretty sure. It's April 2nd. April Fool's is over.
It's true.
Mother Nature.
You Mother Nature. Have a good day, guys.